This is Gamerverse, all things gaming, geeky, and good.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches seeds just like flies. Look out, here comes a Spider-Man.
Welcome to Gamerverse. I'm your host, Erica, and today we're going to be talking about Spider-Man and its two creators. Now, Spider-Man has got to be one of my all-time childhood favorites. I'm not going to get into how many of the different comics streams I kind of went down because, you know, I can probably save that for a later episode. But the sad thing is, I don't think a lot of you know that there were actually two people who created Spider-Man, and they're both really, really important to this process. Most of you would have no problem naming one of them. I mean, this guy has basically made sure that the world knows his name, and that would be Stan the Man Lee, or, you know, Stan Lee to the rest of us. But the sad thing is, I don't think you probably know the other man's name. And you really should. His name is Steve Ditko, and at least in my opinion, he's one of the main reasons that the world fell in love with Spider-Man. I try not to assume that everybody is a giant comic book nerd like me, so I'm going to give a quick kind of overview history of Spider-Man, just the character. For now. So, Spider-Man is Peter Parker, who is a high school science whiz who lives with his aunt and uncle in New York. He is bitten by a radioactive spider while he's at a science exhibit, and he gets the strength and agility of a spider. In the original incarnation, Spider-Man has to create his own web fluid, just showing how chemically smart he is. In future incarnations, if you happen to read further down in the comic line, where certain writers gave him additional abilities of spiders, he was able to create this web himself. So once he finally discovered how to sort of get a handle on these powers, he donned the now very familiar costume, but not for the reasons you would have thought. Initially, when he put on the costume, it was actually to make money. Here's kind of where the sad twist that sort of starts Spider-Man comes in. Spider-Man, the character before he is a superhero, has a chance to stop a robbery in progress, and he chooses not to. The sad thing is that comes back to haunt him quite quickly. The same man he let go is the man who robs and then kills his Uncle Ben, and this leaves Peter Parker and his aunt all by themselves. Now, not only are they all by themselves, but they now have to fend for themselves, which means paying rent. And this is where we see a high school student, Peter Parker, becoming the photographer for the Daily Bugle. And what else is he going to photograph other than, well, Spider-Man? Because, you know, obviously, he has a certain inside information on that one. But that's a really big struggle to put on a high schooler's shoulders. At the end of the day, that's what made Spider-Man just so accessible to so many people, is he had to worry about money. He had to worry about his family. He had to worry about bullies at school. He had to worry about trying to get the girl. I mean, he was the everyman in his own way. And that's a lot of that is really what Ditko brought to the character, what he established from the very beginning. So now you must be wondering, who is this Ditko guy? He's an amazing comic book artist, but he's a very unique one at the same time. He's been described as imaginative, dramatic, and a lot of people actually find him very intimate in the way he draws and expresses his characters. Here's something that's very interesting about the way he draws. People aren't beauty queens in Ditko comics. I mean, Ditko draws real people. Everybody looks like they could have come off the street from any city anywhere. They don't have the chiseled jaws. They don't have the same, I want to say, simplicity or even maybe smoothness that comes especially from the golden age where everybody has a perfect smile, the perfect chiseled jaw, that kind of thing. That's not what Ditko brought. Ditko brought real. And major names in comic books have the utmost respect and praise of the talent that is Steve Ditko. Alan Moore, who we will definitely have an episode on for his own comic genius, I think is one of the greatest appreciators of Ditko's works. He looks at Ditko as a man who draws with just great style and elegance. And he has this way of describing Ditko's characters that I have to share with you. Because he talks about them as if they look like they're going to have this massive revelation or an absolute breakdown at any moment. Ditko does draw great tension in his characters, and if you get a chance, you really should look at issue 1 through 39 if you get a chance to see If Spider-Man. You'll get to see that shown in all the faces of the character. So I think the best way for you to really understand how much Alan Moore connected with Ditko's works is I'm going to tell you a little bit of a fun kind of geeky tidbit of history. So when Moore was younger, he and his band, the Emperors of Ice Cream, wrote a song called Mr. A, and I'm actually going to play a clip for you of Alan Moore reciting the first verse of this song. But I want you to keep in mind that who he's describing really is more Steve Ditko himself more than Mr. A. You'll know more about why that is when you learn more about Ditko. And don't worry, I'm also going to let you know a little bit more about who this Mr. A character is.
He had one room above a thrift store. He had a trunk of books by Ayn Rand. He was short-sighted and reclusive, resisting pleas to take his photograph. He drew a superhero comic. He saw the world in terms of black and white. He said a day's work for a day's pay. That is our one and only right. He takes a card and shades one half of it in dark, so he can demonstrate to you just what he means. He says there's black and there is white, and there is wrong and there is right, and there is nothing, nothing in between. That's what Mr. A said.
I think we need to go back to the beginning to understand why exactly Ditko's name has not really appeared in history the way it really should. And we're going to go all the way back to 1953, which is about the time that Ditko moved to New York. He moved there to join the Cartoonist and Illustrator School. And luckily for him, Jeremy Robinson turned out to be his mentor, who himself works within comics at the time. And one of the neat things about the school is that they usually set up all of their students with jobs in the industry to get real experience. And at the time, Jerry Robinson knew Stan Lee working at Atlas, which was soon to become Marvel. And that's kind of where Stan and Steve met for the first time. This began the Steve Ditko-Stan Lee co-creating relationship. So how basically this worked would be Stan would come up with an outline for a script or a character, and he would pass it off to one of his artists. It would be somebody like Steve Ditko or Jack Kirby or someone like that. And these guys would go off and they'd basically would draw the entire story, leaving space for narrations and speech bubbles. Then they would pass it back to the writer, who at this time would have been somebody like Stan Lee, who was the head and chief writer at the time. And he would fill in all of the script that goes along with the now drawn story. Stan himself says that the relationship with Steve Ditko went from him giving him full scripts to partial scripts to vague outlines to even having Steve show up with full stories already done, and Stan would almost have to read through the comic through the pictures just to even understand the story and then come up with the words himself after, almost like backfilling in the story. So you can see how a lot of this really was Steve Ditko's creations and Steve Ditko's stories. But there's the rub, is who got credit. Stan Lee has notoriously been credited as having said he will take credit for anything that's not nailed down. And this is extremely true of the Spider-Man relationship. It's probably the major cause of why at a beginning height of Spider-Man fame, Ditko completely walked away from the project. He handed in his last issue and he quit. That was it. And he pretty much hasn't spoken to Stan Lee and he has not worked for Marvel since that time. And that became the major fight between the two. Ditko said, it takes the person to bring the drawing to life, to bring the idea to life, that is the true creator. Whereas Stan genuinely believes that the person who comes up with the idea is the creator. And that is that. Ditko flat out created the way that Spider-Man's webbing looked. He created the costume, which was pretty revolutionary at the time, because a lot of superheroes at that time were running around in what would be glorified, almost like strongman costumes. Think the underwear over the, you know, full tights sort of look of Superman and Batman. Then on top of it, to give him a mask that completely covered his face had not been done before. Usually at the most, you would have something where it'd be like a bandana that would half cover, or maybe like a tiny mask that just went around the eyes. But this is sort of what made, again, Spider-Man so connectable to everybody, is that under that mask could be anybody. Besides just the costume, there's a lot of things that are very essential to Spider-Man as we understand him. The way you see his spidey sense tingling out around his head in drawings, the way he moved, posed, clung to walls, almost everything that you connect to Spider-Man and how most artists following him did continue really goes back to Steve Ditko's creation. In 1999, Stan Lee finally admitted that Steve Ditko was the co-creator of Spider-Man, but he did it in such a way that it definitely did not mend their relationship. In fact, if you ask Steve Ditko, Stan Lee still has not given him credit at all. And the reason comes down kind of to semantical wording, but you get a better sense of how his true feelings are. So Stan says he considers Steve Ditko to be the co-creator. What Stan also likes to commonly mention when he came to this conclusion to give the co-creator credit is that he saw how much it bothered Steve Ditko not to be credited, so he wanted to credit him. Though there have been a few things now with the Steve Ditko with a co-creator credit being attached to it in recent Spider-Man history, he's never collected a dime from any of the movies or merchandising, and this is by choice. So you have to understand now that this is not the only thing that Stan Lee did to Steve Ditko, because now we have to talk about Doctor Strange. There is now a famous postcard that has been reprinted in a few biographies of Marvel that actually has Stan Lee outright admitting that Steve Ditko had come up with a funny little idea about a character he was going to call Doctor Strange, who was a surgeon who was in a car crash and he lost the use of both of his hands. And so through kind of his search through the occult, he ends up discovering magic, and it continues with the whole plot line from there. He already credits Steve Ditko in writing as being the sole originator of both the idea and the art for this panel, but he actually took full credit yet again. So I have to explain just a little bit about what happened with Doctor Strange and why it was yet again such a huge and popular comic that Steve Ditko is barely even referenced on anymore. So in 1963, and this started off as a very small 5-page panel in the back of Strange Tales, it starts off with these very, very small panels that are almost claustrophobic. It starts off in the real world, and as the panels begin to grow and expand, they become eventually these huge full-page illustrations. Now, we've seen this before in comics today, and today we actually kind of take it for granted how much people play with the layout of comic paneling, but you have to understand at this time, this was completely unheard of. Doctor Strange got, it's just kind of this, well, unfortunate strong drug association, but you know, you would understand if you see all the weird imagery. But it's also connected to the Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test, which is the book written by Tom Wolfe, when the members on the bus further are dropping acid and reading Doctor Strange. The funny thing is Ditko is an incredibly straight-laced guy, and odds are he's never taken drugs a day in his life. So he was once asked, where did the images come from? And he honestly said, I just thought really hard about what another world would look like. And that's just such a Steve Ditko thing. You have to understand, Steve Ditko was just a very steadfast, moral, and ethical person. To get a really good sense of this, you'll understand more if you understand the next two characters he created. Now, of course, at this point, he had been moving on to more independent publishers who gave him a lot more free rein and were a lot more open with his ideas. So the first character that came out of this that eventually actually got wrapped up into the DC universe later on was The Question. And The Question is kind of like a detective, but he has this really strange feature where he puts on a mask to make it look like he has no face. This character is very, very steadfast in what he sees as right and wrong. And he's kind of a precursor in his own way to what comes next, and that's Mr. A. When Ditko created Mr. A, he was kind of going through an Ayn Rand phase, and he got really into this objectivism standpoint, and I really do think it kind of enveloped his life because he seems to live that way even currently. But to understand Mr. A, you have to understand it like this, and this is just a great quote right from the opening of Mr. A's comic. There is white, and there is black, and there is nothing in between. And that's pretty much the philosophy of Mr. A, is you are either good or you're bad, but there is nothing in between. And that's the starkness of this character. Both brought a lot of love from some people and obviously turned a lot of people off. It's hard to think of morality as being that hard and steadfast. And that's exactly what these characters were turning into. Now, what's really kind of interesting, and skipping back to Alan Moore again, is Alan Moore actually himself credits Mr. A and Steve Ditko as being a huge influence on his character Rorschach from Watchmen. So if you're ever wondering where that very unique and interesting character came from, it's quite the homage when you go back and kind of discover Mr. A. After creating these kind of offshoot characters on the side, Ditko actually moved his way back to DC Comics. And at the time, he created Hawk and Dove, which are brother superheroes. Then he also created the really strange character called the Creeper. And to be honest, I never really understood that one. So if you're a fan, great. If maybe you can understand, explain it to me one day. If not, then we're probably on the same page. So there were a couple reported large fights that Stan and Steve had before their falling out that might have kind of led up to what happened in the first place. So one of the major ones is the real and true identity of the Green Goblin. If you don't know who the Green Goblin is, he's one of the major bad guys within the Spider-Man universe, and there is a very personal connection there. And this personal connection is kind of what they fought over. Steve Ditko really wanted the identity of the Green Goblin to be somebody that was unknown in the universe already, almost this guy off the street, almost to make it scarier that it's somebody you would never suspect because you don't know them. Stan, who is much more into kind of the soap opera angle of writing, and you get a lot of that when you look at, let's say collections such as X-Men would be a good example. He really wanted it to be somebody that was very personal, and so his choice was the father of Peter Parker's best friend, and this would be Norman Osborn. Now, they differed on a lot of other ideas as well. Steve Ditko would be somebody you consider to have a very, very obvious line drawn in the sand of how he sees moral and ethics, and I can't give that same credit to Stan Lee. I think understanding the difference between the two in this regard, especially from the kind of ethical standpoint, it explains a lot why Steve Ditko isn't satisfied with the considered co-creator credit, has never taken any of the money from the creations of now Spider-Man or Doctor Strange. I think he's genuinely somebody who will not settle. And this is where things get maybe a little sad. Steve Ditko has not exactly lived by the best standards, shall we say, because obviously money is always been a little bit tighter. He hasn't made the money that Stan Lee, shall we say, has. And he's not the only one. I'm going to do a small mini-sode all about this on the side to give a bit more context, but Stan Lee, for example, took credit for just about every character created during the time of his run, which, I mean, if you understand from any creative standpoint, is basically impossible. And discrediting people like Steve Ditko and Jack Kirby and others for just how much contribution they really gave to the birth and continued success of Marvel. And these guys, a lot of them, Jack Kirby kind of excluded, but a lot of them, because they didn't get the credit that they deserve, people like the creators of Superman and Batman and people like Steve Ditko, who really did live in very impoverished conditions for people who created such beloved and multi-million dollar industries.
Ditko has still not stopped making comics, and I highly encourage anybody who's interested in his work, especially if you go and peek at some of his art, to have a look online, because he still has a lot of comics that he runs through mail order subscriptions. So as long as you sign up for the service, and I guess you pay, you'll have no problem keeping up on his current work. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Game Reverse. If you're looking to learn more about Steve Ditko, I highly recommend you check out Jonathan Ross's In Search of Steve Ditko. It's a really great special, and you'll learn a lot. You can follow us on Twitter at GamerverseCast, and you can follow me personally, Erica, at Frenemy Games, and get an inside glimpse into my tabletop game designing. Thank you to Ready Fight for our first iTunes review. It is very much appreciated. So if you're interested in leaving us a review, can you please go over to iTunes and show us a little love and help other fantastic geeks like yourself find us? If you're interested in sending a little support, we also have a Patreon, and you can find that at patreon.com/GameReversePodcast. Until next time, gamers, this is Game Reverse, all things gaming, geeky, and good.